When you have longevity in whatever it is that you do, there will be words said and written about you. Many will be factual, others, well, not so much, rumors, I guess you'd call them. Your accomplishments will be either fairly represented or decreased through some sort of political slant. This can certainly be said about Ronald Reagan. Did you know, as an example, that there have been over 11,000 books written about President Reagan? I say the following with complete confidence. None of them have given a full and fair view of Reagan's life until now. My next guest spent the past decade talking with people from Reagan's personal and political life about the man and the president. He's combined those insights with the facts of history. We like those a lot, anything to do with history. The result is his new book, Reagan, His Life and Legend. Well, being a best-selling author, he's senior fellow with the Council on Foreign Relations and also a Washington Post columnist, Max Booth. Out of 11,000 books in the past, I don't say this as trying to gloss over anything. This is the book on Reagan, simply said as that.
Well, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. I spent a decade working on it, so it's very gratifying to hear that judgment.
MaxBoot.net is Mr. Boot's website. Learn more about this and his other work. And you mentioned, too, a decade working that. Was that your expectation, or was this a long-distance race that turned into an unintentional marathon for you?
No, that was my expectation. I knew that Reagan, you know, lived a long time, did a lot of stuff. It would take a long time to, really research his life and to write it up. So I knew this was going to be a big and lengthy project going in.
And you were, a lot of the people you spoke with have since passed on, again, giving example to longevity of this project. But when you're speaking with people in Reagan's life, do you ever find someone who actually fully knew Ronald Reagan, or was it just what he allowed them to see of him?
Yeah, I think I'm not sure that anybody fully knew Ronald Reagan. Even Nancy Reagan, who was certainly the person closest to him, said that there was part of him that was walled off even from her. He was, I mean, this is one of the central paradoxes of Reagan that I examine in the book, is that he was, you know, seemingly a very genial, open, warm, friendly guy. That's how he certainly appeared on TV. But people who actually knew him, you know, said that he was actually very remote, very distant, very impossible to really know, because he was, you know, a very private person. As one of his aides said to me, he would have made a pretty good hermit. And that's something that I trace back to his very difficult itinerant childhood in small town Illinois in the early 20th century. You know, his father, Jack, was an alcoholic shoe salesman. The family kept moving from one town to another because Jack kept losing one job after another. And so Little Dutch Reagan, as he was then called, never really stayed in town long enough to become close to the other kids. And so he kind of erected this mental barrier around himself, which never really fell throughout his entire life. And so he could be very warm and genial, but also he didn't really get close to a lot of people. He kept everybody at kind of arm's length, and he sort of used his stock of jokes and stories, anecdotes, to entertain people, but also to avoid really connecting with them at a deep level.
And yet he seemed so approachable. I mean, we can think back to, I think it was at the 1980 campaign, where he walked into the bar in Boston and was having beers with the boys at the bar.
Yeah, no, he certainly seemed like one of the guys, but in fact, he was not somebody who would go out and have a beer with anybody. I mean, one of the things I discovered was he basically never called anybody on the phone unless his staff told him to do that. And they would say, you know, call so-and-so and ask for their vote on this legislation. So he would do that. But, you know, most presidents have a big network of friends, and they're constantly dialing their friends and talking to people outside the White House about, how am I doing? What's going on? What do you think? He would never do any of that. He was perfectly genial. Somebody showed up in his living room, but he would never go out and seek out anybody, never actively call anybody, never say, hey, let's go out for a beer or, you know, dinner or something. Just never do that. I mean, he would certainly go out with people, but it was when, you know, Nancy Reagan said, let's go out and do this. And he would say, okay, sure. But he would never initiate any kind of social contact.
When we want to explore the roots of Reagan, which you certainly do, and, well, one thing, too, he doesn't seem to ever lose his roots, does he? He always is. You mentioned about the difficult childhood he had, but really through all stages of his life, he always seemed to be connected to his past, because that's what he fed off of, it seems.
I think that was part of Reagan's appeal, is that here is a guy who was a Hollywood movie star, then a TV star, then, you know, governor of the most populous state, and finally president of the United States. So he ascended about as high as you can go, and yet he always kept his feet planted firmly on the ground. He had a very winning way about him because he was always kind of modest and self-effacing. And I think one of the more interesting insights into Reagan comes if you visit his ranch outside of Santa Barbara. And it's a beautiful, you know, it's a beautiful landscape, but the actual ranch house itself is exceedingly modest. It's about 1,500 square feet. It's got Formica counters. It looks like the decor was scavenged from a thrift shop. You know, this is not like a kind of home you would expect for one of the most famous people in the world, but he was perfectly happy there. He didn't need a lot. He was perfectly happy going out, riding horses, chopping wood, and coming back and, you know, watching a little TV and going to bed. He didn't need a lot. So, you know, he was remarkably down to earth, no matter how high he climbed.
Or Max Boot, his new book, Reagan, His Life and Legend, maxboot.net, the website. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Before the governorship, before the presidency, there was the speech for Goldwater, the Time for Choosing speech, which has been heralded as a verbal manifesto for conservatism. It didn't work out for the election for the Republicans that year, obviously. But you write about if you really look at the words, it's almost Trump-like in its spirit and imagery, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean there was real extremism in his message. I mean, this was his introduction to a national political audience. This very influential speech he made on behalf of Goldwater a couple of weeks before the 1964 election. And it was very compelling. It was finely honed. He was a tremendous speaker. But the message was very hard line, but almost conspiratorial. I mean, he was talking about basically how the country was heading down the road towards socialism and communism, and essentially because of proposals like Medicare and Medicaid, what he called socialized medicine. And he actually said, I mean, he was a former Democrat, former New Dealer, grew up worshiping FDR, but by this point, he was saying that the party of Jefferson, Jackson, and Cleveland was marching down the road under the banners of Marx, Lenin, and Stalin. I mean, that's a pretty loaded thing to say about the Democratic Party, especially when they were actually, you know, actively anti-communist and, you know, standing up to communist aggression, whether in Cuba or Vietnam or Berlin or whatever. But, you know, he was embracing this very right-wing conspiratorial worldview, which really resonated with a lot of the Republican base. But he made that very hard line message go down easier because he said it with kind of a wink and a smile. He wasn't scowling. He wasn't shouting. He was, you know, his good nature kind of made the message much more palatable.
Is it fair to say that Reagan knew what he needed to especially say in order to win an election? But when he did win, both as governor and as president, he saw a different way to address what he thought was needed to be done.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, he could be very ideological, and especially when he was on the campaign trail. And, you know, I uncovered evidence that he was reading John Birch Society publications, really crazy conspiratorial tracts, and repeating some of their claims. But he was able to pivot once he was in office as both governor and as president and move away from extreme ideology to be a very pragmatic, centrist politician who was able to make deals with Democrats. And, you know, he often said that he had nothing but contempt for conservatives who go over the cliff with their flags flying. He was somebody, as he often said, he was perfectly happy to get 80% of what he wanted and come back for more tomorrow instead of insisting on, you know, absolutist demands. And you saw that in both Sacramento and Washington, in both places where he cut some taxes, sure, but he also raised a lot of taxes and raised spending. As governor of California, he signed the most liberal abortion law in the country and one of the toughest gun control bills in the country. Then as president, he signed a law in 1986 that legalized millions of undocumented immigrants. And, of course, his most important achievement as president in his second term, working with Mikhail Gorbachev to peacefully end the Cold War, which is the last thing you would have expected from somebody like Ronald Reagan, who was such a hardline, longtime anti-communist, opposition to communism, to find his whole political identity. And yet here he was able to work with the world's leading communist to reduce tensions and to reduce nuclear stockpiles. That was the ultimate tribute to his pragmatism in office.
And it certainly helped, too, that he had a Russian leader that wasn't dying on him every 6 months, which was happening at that point in history. Just to wrap up here, do you think Reagan was really concerned about a legacy, or was he just more concerned about trying to do as best he can for as many people as he could?
The latter. He was just concerned with trying to do the best he could. He didn't really think, I don't think he thought much about his legacy. I mean, after he left office, Nancy and some of his backers, went to a lot of trouble to create the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, which is a great institution, and that's where I researched this book. But I don't think Reagan ever much cared about that. He was just happy to go to his ranch and putter around and, you know, ride his horses, maybe play golf occasionally. That was actually, I think, one of the things that made him so popular was he didn't seem to care that much about his popularity, although it did matter to him. It truly did, and he valued his connection with the American people, but he wasn't obsessed about how people thought about him. He had kind of a self-confidence about him. He was a grown-up, and I think that was a lot of his appeal.
Well, as I said, to wrap up here, this is, without any question, the book on Ronald Reagan. It's sizable. I'll give you the heads up about that, but it's worthy of your time because it presents the human side, the political side, the factual side of one of our great presidents. He's usually ranked in the top 10, usually around 7, 8 positions, and that's not too bad when you think about the presidents and the number that we have and what they've been confronted with, faced with, and had to overcome. Reagan, his life and legend, maxboot.net, the website. Along with being a best-selling author, he's senior fellow with the Council on Foreign Relations, Washington Post columnist Max Boot. Thank you for honoring the man with the facts of history and the insight from those who you spoke with. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much for those kind words and for having me on. Really appreciate it.